Welcome to the Deep Dive. And today we're diving into something pretty unique.
Unique how?
We're working with just one source this time.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Just one.
Just one. A text file. It's called, get this, all from -claude.txt. Straightforward, right?
To the point. So what's in this all from -claude.txt?
It's a doozy. This file lays out a whole model of reality.
Okay, a model of reality,
Yeah.
like a framework for understanding everything. Ambitious.
It really is, and it gets even more interesting. At the core of this model is this idea of Christ. But not just Christ as a historical figure. This model is talking about Christ as this like unifying evolutionary what's the word?
Vector, force.
Vector driving everything, and I mean everything, towards unity with God.
Wow. Okay, we're talking big picture stuff here. So where do we even begin with something this massive?
Well, that's what we're here to find out, right? And thankfully, we've got our expert to help us navigate this. I mean, even if we try to tackle this objectively without, needing to buy into any specific beliefs, it's still a lot to process.
It really is. This model isn't just trying to explain, the universe as we currently understand it. It's going for the whole shebang, the entirety of existence, including this idea of ascending to an infinite God.
Okay, so we're not talking about some small niche theory here. We're talking about a model that's trying to be a model of, well, everything.
Exactly. And to really wrap our heads around it, we need to start with the foundation, the core idea. Christ, not as just some guy who lived a long time ago, but as the Logos.
Logos. Okay, for those of us who might not be theologians, what are we talking about when we say logos?
Good question. It's a term with a lot of layers.
Yeah.
In this context, the Logos isn't just about language, It's about this divine rationality, this cosmic order, and intelligence that the model is saying underpins the entire universe. It's like the source, it actually pulls from the Bible here, John 1.1. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God."
Okay, so tapping into some theological roots right off the bat.
Right. And that word, it's often interpreted as logos in the original Greek.
Okay, so the logos, this divine rationality, what's the significance of connecting that to Christ?
That's key. See, this model is saying that the logos, it's not static. It's not just this like fixed thing. It's dynamic, it's creative, it's this force that's actively shaping and guiding reality towards this ultimate unity with God.
So not just the architect of the universe, but also like the conductor of its symphony.
That's a great way to put it. It's this bold statement suggesting that everything from the laws of physics to like how consciousness evolved is somehow orchestrated by this logos.
Okay, so where do we even start trying to unpack something this big?
Well, the source breaks it down into a few key pillars. We should probably start with that whole Christ is the Logos
All
concept.
right, let's start there. We've got Christ as the Logos. What else?
So it talks about these three different dimensions of reality.
Dimensions, like more than the three we think of.
No, it's not talking about extra spatial dimensions or anything like that. It's more like levels or aspects of reality as we experience it. So there's the physical, that's the easy one, right? What we can see and touch and interact with.
Makes sense. What about the other two?
Then there's the cognitive. That's all about our minds,
Yeah.
our thoughts, our consciousness, our ability to understand the universe around us.
Okay, so like our inner world as opposed to the outer world of the physical dimension.
Exactly. And then there's the spiritual dimension. This one gets a little trickier to define, but it's about morality, our sense of right and wrong, and our connection to something, let's say, bigger than ourselves.
So it's not enough to just talk about stars and atoms. Our thoughts, our values, our sense of purpose, that's all part of this big cosmic picture, too.
Exactly. And the source is saying that to really understand where humanity fits into all of this, we need to understand how these dimensions connect, how they weave together.
Okay, now we're getting into some really interesting territory. So, what does this model say about, well, us, about human history, about the events we see unfolding around us? How does it all fit into this grand scheme of spiritual evolution?
That's where things get really fascinating. This model takes events that traditionally we might see as tragedies or setbacks, wars, famines, injustices, and it reframes them. It looks at them through this lens of spiritual evolution.
So it's not saying that these terrible things are good, but that there's a bigger picture, a different way of understanding them.
Right. It's like imagine you're putting together a puzzle.
Right.
You've got all these different pieces, and some of them on their own might seem kind of dark, maybe even unpleasant. But when you put them all together, you start to see how they contribute to the bigger picture. They're essential, even the dark ones, for the full image to emerge. That's kind of how this model approaches these difficult parts of human history.
Okay, so less about saying everything happens for a reason and more about looking for the lessons, the growth, even in the midst of suffering. I'm curious to hear how this model squares that concept with the very real pain and suffering that exist in the world.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's one we'll definitely dig into. But first, I think it might be helpful to start with a specific example.
All right, let's do it. Give me an example of a, let's call it a historical head scratcher, and how this model approaches it.
Okay, how about we start with a concept that's central to many religions, including Christianity? Let's talk about the fall.
Okay, the fall. Big topic, just to make sure everyone's on the same page. What are we talking about when we say the fall?
Right, so the fall. This is that classic story, right?
Mm.
Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, paradise lost.
Forbidden fruit, temptation, the whole nine yards. What's the significance of the fall in a broader sense?
Well, it's often seen as this turning point. Humanity was in this state of grace, of innocence, and then boom, disobedience. Sin enters the picture, suffering, death. It's kind of this primal wound, that we're still grappling with.
Okay, heavy stuff. So how does this model, with all its talk of unity and evolution, approach something as, well, loaded as the fall?
It doesn't shy away from it, that's for sure. The model acknowledges the fall as a significant disruption, a wrong turn on this journey towards unity.
But doesn't this model say everything is moving towards God?
It does. But it doesn't see the fall as some kind of full stop, more like, maybe a detour, a really significant detour. The model actually presents it as the first major challenge humanity had to overcome in a spiritual evolution.
Okay, so less of a full stop, more of a detour. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how a model centered on Christ as this unifying force makes sense of something as destructive as war.
It's a really interesting proposition. What the source seems to be getting at is that even in the darkest chapters of human history, even in the midst of violence and chaos, the logos, that unifying force we talked about earlier, is still there, subtly guiding things, subtly pushing us, even if it's through incredibly painful experiences, toward a higher understanding, a deeper awareness of the need for peace.
So the idea is that humanity learns, even if it's through incredibly painful lessons, the true cost of division and violence. I have to say, this is a pretty different lens through which to view
It
history.
definitely challenges conventional thinking. And what's even more interesting is how the source connects this concept of spiritual evolution to things like political and social progress.
All right, let's dive into that. We've talked about the fall and even war. How does this model approach things like political oppression and the fight for equality?
This is where I think the model starts to get really nuanced. It acknowledges that throughout history, there have been countless instances of injustice, oppression, and systemic inequality.
Which sadly continues to this day.
Absolutely. But what's fascinating is that the model doesn't shy away from these harsh realities. Instead, it argues that the very existence of these struggles, the ongoing fight for equality and justice, is in itself a manifestation of that same drive toward unity.
So it's not claiming that oppression is good or ordained, but rather that the human response to it, the fight for a more just world, is a reflection of this deeper spiritual evolution.
Exactly. And the source points out that many of the advancements we've made in terms of human rights, social justice, and equality have roots in, you guessed it, Christian theology.
That's an interesting connection. I'll admit, I haven't thought of it quite like that before.
It's not always the direct line, of course,
Yeah.
but the source argues that the very concept of inherent human dignity, the idea that every individual has worth simply by virtue of being human, is foundational to Christian teachings.
And this concept has fueled countless movements for social change, the abolition of slavery, the civil rights movement, the fight for gender equality, all pushing towards a more just and equitable world.
Precisely. And the model sees these movements, these tireless efforts to create a more just world, as expressions of that same unifying force, that same drive toward a higher state of being. It's like this model is suggesting that even in the midst of humanity's darkest moments, there's this underlying current, this persistent tug towards something brighter, something more unified. That's a powerful way to put it. And the source doesn't just stop with these large-scale historical events. It also explores the role of ideas and philosophy in this grand scheme of things.
Oh, this should be good. Philosophical debates, clashing ideologies, those don't exactly scream unity at first glance. How does this model handle something as potentially divisive as differing worldviews?
That's a question that takes us to the heart of how this model views knowledge, truth, and the very nature of reality. It's a fascinating thread to untangle.
Well, then let's start untangling. What does this model have to say about the role of philosophy in our journey towards unity?
That's where things start to get really interesting. You see, instead of picking a winner, you know, declaring one philosophy as the ultimate truth, this model, it kind of flips the script.
Okay, I'm intrigued. How does it flip the script?
Well, it suggests that all these different philosophies, all these different ways of understanding the universe, they're not necessarily in opposition. It's like they're all pieces of a larger puzzle.
Pieces of a puzzle. I like that analogy. So each philosophical school of thought, each perspective, it's like a piece of a much bigger picture, and we need all of them to see the complete image.
Exactly. Each one offers a glimpse into the nature of reality. But none of them quite capture the whole thing on their own. They all have something to contribute, even those that seem to completely contradict each other. It's like, through these different perspectives, humanity is kind of circling around a central truth. And what does this model say that central truth is? You guessed it. Christ as the Logos.
So Christ as the Logos, in this model, it's like the missing piece that brings the whole puzzle together. It's what allows us to see how all these seemingly disparate pieces actually fit.
Exactly. It's the unifying principle that ties it all together.
Okay, I'm with you so far. But this raises a question for me. If all these different philosophies are just fragments of a larger truth, what's the point of even having them? Do our individual perspectives really matter if they're all just, you know, pieces of this larger puzzle that's already been solved?
That's a great question, and it gets to the heart of how this model views knowledge and understanding. You see, it's not about dismissing these different perspectives. It's about recognizing their value, even if they're incomplete on their own. It's the process that matters.
The process? What do you mean?
The model seems to be saying that every time we engage with a new idea, every time we try to wrap our heads around a different way of seeing the world, we're actually stretching our cognitive muscles. We're expanding our understanding, getting closer and closer to a more complete picture of reality.
So it's less about finding a definitive answer and more about the journey of exploration and discovery.
Exactly. It's like we're all climbers, you know, making our way up a mountain. We might take different paths, different approaches, but we're all striving towards that same summit, that same breathtaking view from the top.
That's a pretty inspiring way to look at it. But I have to admit, it's a bit hard to reconcile this idea of philosophy as a journey with the very real divisions and disagreements that exist in the world.
Oh, absolutely. The model isn't saying that disagreements are bad or that everyone needs to agree all the time. It's more about recognizing that those disagreements, those clashes of perspective, they can actually be incredibly productive.
Productive? How so?
Think about it this way. When we encounter a different viewpoint, especially one that challenges our own deeply held beliefs, it forces us to examine those beliefs more closely. It pushes us to articulate why we believe what we believe and to consider whether there might be other equally valid ways of seeing the world.
So it's like a workout for our minds, for our ability to empathize and understand different perspectives.
Exactly. And the model suggests that this kind of intellectual and emotional stretching is essential for our spiritual growth, for moving closer to that ultimate unity.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop there. The source goes on to apply this same lens to some of the most pressing challenges we face today, things like the environmental crisis and the rapid advancement of technology.
Okay, now we're really bringing it into the present moment. Let's talk about the environment first. How does a model rooted in ancient texts and theological concepts address something as modern and urgent as climate change?
That's a great question. And it might seem like a bit of a leap, but the source argues that the environmental crisis is not just a scientific problem or a political problem, but a spiritual one. It's all connected.
Okay, I'm listening. How so?
The source draws a direct line between the state of our planet and the state of our souls. It goes back to that idea of humanity as stewards of creation, a concept that's often rooted in religious teachings.
Stewards of creation. So it's not just about saving the planet for its own sake, but recognizing that our well-being, our very souls, are intertwined with the well-being of the natural world.
Exactly. And the source suggests that the growing global movement to protect the environment, to combat climate change, it's not just a political or social movement, it's a spiritual awakening.
Spiritual awakening. That's a powerful way to frame it. So are you saying that caring for the planet is a form of spiritual practice?
That's the idea the source is putting forward. It's about recognizing our interconnectedness, our responsibility, not just to each other, but to all of creation. It's about understanding that harming the planet ultimately harms ourselves.
It's like that old saying, we don't inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. It's about taking a long-term perspective, recognizing that our actions have consequences that extend far beyond ourselves.
Precisely. And the source argues that this shift in perspective, this recognition of our interconnectedness with all of creation, it's a crucial step on that journey towards unity. But it doesn't stop there. The source also tackles another defining feature of our modern world, technology.
Now that's a big one. Technology feels like such a double-edged sword. On one hand, it has the potential to connect us in unprecedented ways, to solve some of the world's most pressing problems. But it also has the capacity to divide us, to amplify existing inequalities, even to pose existential threats to humanity. How does this model, with its focus on unity and spiritual evolution, approach something as complex and rapidly evolving as technology?
That's a question a lot of people are grappling with right now, and the source doesn't shy away from it. In fact, it offers a really interesting perspective, one that I think challenges the way technology is often portrayed.
Okay, I'm listening. What's the source's take? Does it see technology as ultimately a force for good or for evil?
It's not that simple. The source doesn't see technology as inherently good or evil. It's more about how we use it, the intentions we bring to it, and whether we align it with those core principles of love, wisdom, and compassion that are at the heart of this whole model.
So it's not about demonizing technology or rejecting progress altogether. It's about being mindful, about making sure that our technological advancements are guided by a sense of ethics, a deeper understanding of what it means to be human.
Exactly. The source suggests that every technological development, from artificial intelligence to social media to biotechnology, should be evaluated through the lens of its impact on human dignity, on our relationships with each other, and with the natural world.
So in a sense, it's about ensuring that technology, instead of becoming something that separates us or distracts us from our true nature, actually helps us to connect more deeply with ourselves, with each other, and with that divine spark that this model says resides within us all.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And it speaks to the underlying message of hope that permeates this entire model. Even in the face of seemingly insurmountable challenges, even as we navigate a world increasingly shaped by technology and grapple with issues of global scale, this model reminds us that we're not alone.
We're all part of something much bigger than ourselves, something that connects us all, something that's constantly drawing us towards a higher state of being. But, and I think this is important to acknowledge, this model isn't all sunshine and roses. It doesn't shy away from the very real suffering that exists in the world.
Exactly. It acknowledges the darkness, the pain, the injustices that continue to plague humanity. But it doesn't leave us there. It doesn't allow us to wallow in despair or to become cynical about the future. Instead, it offers a way to make sense of the darkness, a way to find meaning and purpose even in the midst of suffering.
And what is that way? How does it propose we navigate those dark times, those moments when the vision of unity and harmony feels impossible to grasp?
That's where the real work begins. And it's not about finding easy answers or quick fixes. It's about cultivating a deep sense of hope, a belief that even in the darkest of times, even when all seems lost, that unifying force, that logos, is still at work, subtly guiding us, nudging us towards a brighter future.
It's a powerful message of hope. But where do we go from here? This model, this whole concept of Christ as this unifying force, it's a lot to take in.
It really is. And I think the source recognizes that. It's not about giving us all the answers, you know. It's more about giving us a new way to look at things, a new lens through which to view the world and our place in it.
A lens that emphasizes our interconnectedness, our potential for growth, even in the face of adversity.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that we're not just isolated individuals, you know, stumbling around in the dark. We're part of something much bigger, something that connects us all.
Something that's always moving, always evolving.
And we have a role to play in that evolution. The choices we make, the actions we take, they matter. They ripple outward, impacting not just ourselves, but the world around us.
So it's not enough to just understand this model intellectually. We have to live it. We have to embody it in our daily lives.
That's what the source seems to be getting at. It's not just a theory. It's a call to action.
A call to what? What kind of action?
A call to live more consciously, more compassionately, more in alignment with that unifying force, that logos, that this model places at the center of everything. It's about bringing those principles of love, wisdom, and compassion into everything we do, from our personal relationships to our work to our engagement with the world around us.
So it's about bridging the gap between theory and practice, between the ideas we're exploring here and the way we actually live our lives.
Exactly. And the source suggests that this isn't just some abstract, unattainable goal. It's something we can work towards every single day. It's about making small choices, taking small actions that move us however imperfectly, in the direction of greater unity, greater understanding, greater love.
It's about recognizing those moments when we have a choice to make, to react with anger or with compassion, to build walls or to build bridges, and choosing the path that leads us closer to that vision of a more unified, more compassionate world.
Precisely. And the model suggests that even small acts of kindness, small gestures of understanding, they can have a ripple effect. They can contribute to a larger shift in consciousness, a movement towards that ultimate unity that this whole model is pointing towards.
It's like we're all holding a piece of the puzzle, and it's up to each of us to find our place, to connect with others, to create something beautiful and whole. It's been an incredible deep dive exploring this unique model, this vision of reality.
It really has. It's challenging, thought-provoking, and ultimately, I think, deeply hopeful.
Hopeful, yes. And it leaves us with a lot to think about, a lot to chew on, maybe even a few things to argue about.
There's always room for healthy debate, right?
Absolutely. But more importantly, it leaves us with a sense of possibility, a reminder that we're not just passive observers in this grand cosmic dance. We're active participants, and we have the power to shape the future, both individually and collectively. And on that note, we want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us on this deep dive.
Thank you.
Until next time, keep asking those big questions, keep seeking those deeper connections, and keep striving towards a more unified, more compassionate world. This has been The Deep Dive.